I'm Marty Moscoen. Welcome back to Radio Times. Wade Michael Page, accused of killing six worshipers at a Sikh temple in Oak Creek, Wisconsin, and wounding several others, had long-standing associations with white supremacist groups. He also played in a number of hate metal rock bands with names like Definite Hate and End Apathy. Our guest, Peter Seamy, interviewed Page in 2001 when he was doing research on white supremacist groups in Southern California. He's a criminology professor at the University of Nebraska and co-author of a book called American Swastika, Inside the White Power Movement's Hidden Spaces of Hate. And he joins us today on Radio Times. And Pete Seamy, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thanks for having me.
Also with us in our Philadelphia studios is Daryl Lamont Jenkins. He's been tracking racist hate groups in the Delaware Valley as founder of the One People's Project. And Daryl, nice to have you with us on Radio Times as well.
Same. Good to be here.
Nice to have you here. Nice to have you both here. And Pete, let me begin with you. And when and why did you first meet Wade Michael Page?
In 1997, I began doing field work, interviewing and spending time with members of different white supremacist groups across the country. And the goal of that project was to try and get a sense, you know, kind of from the inside, you know, how a person becomes involved in that kind of a group and how you get involved in that world and what it looks like kind of from the inside. I began attending, you know, meetings with different white supremacist groups, gatherings, music shows. By 1999, my research started to really focus in on Southern California, and one of my main contacts in Southern California ended up being Page's housemate.
Wow.
And so through that contact, I met Page around 2001, and for close to 3 years, off and on, I, you know, spent quite a bit of time with him, you know, interviewing him, but also just, you know, kind of hanging out with him at his home and, you know, going to lunch, going to dinners, going out to bars with him, you know, shooting pool, that kind of stuff.
So I
got to know him pretty well.
Was he a member of a group or someone more on the sidelines?
Well, at that point in time, you know, he had just relocated to Southern California. He met members of the first white power band that he was part of, Youngland, at a music show in 2000 in Georgia. And he clicked with them and decided to eventually relocate to Southern California to join that band. But as far as being a member of a group during the time period that I knew him, he was affiliating with a lot of different groups, Volksfront, National Alliance, Hammerskins, but he wasn't a member per se of any one group. And at that point in time, I think, you know, he was kind of trying to get acclimated to Southern California, and, you know, he was meeting a lot of new people, and he was very involved in the music scene by the time that I knew him, and he was playing, you know, in a lot of different shows, not only in Southern California, but across the country.
Did he ever say things that would be considered racist or disparaging about minority groups?
Regularly. Yeah, but very consistent with, you know, other people that I met. I mean, that's, you know, being a part of those types of groups means that you say those things on a regular basis. That's part of, you know, that's a very consistent part of that culture, that world. And so, you know, he did regularly make those comments, but they weren't any more extreme than, you know, most of the other people that I met during my time in the field.
Did he ever say anything specifically about Sikhs?
Never. We had an exchange over email shortly after 9/11 where he talked about Muslims in particular. He, you know, was very angered and outraged by 9/11 and felt that America should basically just, you know, head over to the Middle East and bomb everything. Most of his, you know, rhetoric was anti-Semitic. You know, he felt that basically there's a Jewish conspiracy to dominate world affairs and was anti-black.
You also describe him as someone, I don't know if he had a drinking problem, but did a lot of drinking, heavy drinking.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not a, you know, substance abuse counselor or a clinician, but it was pretty obvious he, you know, was an alcoholic. He drank to the point of passing out on a pretty regular basis. Prevented him from going to work on many occasions. He had during the time that I knew him, he had a pretty spotty work record. And, yeah, he drank very heavily.
I do want to get to Daryl in on the conversation, but something else that you have written about, Pete, and seems to be something that Wade Michael Page was involved in, are some of these rock groups. I'm not sure exactly what to call them. They've been called a number of different things, hate rock groups. What do you call them?
I usually refer to them as either neo-Nazi rock bands or white power rock bands. So sometimes, hate rock. I think I see them as all somewhat interchangeable.
And is it the kind of, lyrics and propaganda one would associate with neo-Nazis?
Yeah, I mean, there is a pretty wide range in the lyrics. You get from the most, vile, extreme, let's go out and lynch people, let's gas people, really that vile and extreme, to more kind of subtle, innocuous lyrics. For instance, the first band that Page was a member of, Youngland, some of their lyrics were like, stand one, stand all, I'm for you, you're for me. That kind of stuff is a little more coded. So there is a pretty wide range in the lyrical content of white power, neo-Nazi, hate rock.
And if you were to go to one of these concerts, would it look like a rock concert?
Well, I mean, they're much smaller than a mainstream rock concert. The audience is going to be, is going to look, in terms of people. Many of the people will have a lot of tattoos. It's a male-dominated environment. Oftentimes, men are taking their shirts off and showing off their tattoos. The dance is very aggressive, kind of a mosh pit type stuff, but a little bit different. Fights break out sometimes, and occasionally even stabbings and even worse. It's going to be decorated, adorned with symbols of hate, so swastika banners, Confederate flags, and emblems that signify different organizations. There's going to be a lot of literature available. So it looks like a music show, a regular music show in some ways, but in other ways it's very, very much, a political event that's part of the white supremacist movement, and the musicians and people that go there see it as a form of political activism.
Daryl, let me get you another conversation. How I guess, important are these rock groups in helping us understand these supremacist groups?
Well, one of the things to consider is when you're talking about Wade Michael Page, who was basically in the largest bands in the white power scene, is that they're connected to a more important element, the street gang. And in Wade Michael Page's case, he was a Hammerskin member of the Hammerskin Nation. And the groups that he was members of, Definite Hate and Apathy, Youngland and such, Max Resist, all of them were part of that Hammerskin Nation stable. Even their members are more or less interchangeable, I was told. Some band members in one band would go to another band every now and again. And when you see that, you see how the hate groups themselves would use the music to actually recruit people, recruit new members and such. A couple of years ago, there was an attempt by a white power record label called Panzerfaust to recruit children at high schools and stuff via a compilation CD called Project Schoolyard. It had a little bit of press here and there, but eventually it fell apart because the label fell apart. But that gives you an idea of how much of an effort they try to put into the music to get people to come to them.
Pete, let me give you a chance to weigh in on that. Do you see these concerts or maybe the CDs that are created as a form of recruitment as well?
Well, the groups themselves, define it that way, as, as mentioned, Project Schoolyard, and various other efforts, it's very clear cut that they see their music as a way to try and reach out and gain new adherents. And also as a way to help support and sustain the members that they have. And so members will talk about the importance of music to help them feel like they're part of something larger, a part of a bigger movement, that there's other people out there that share their views and they're not completely alone in this world. It's a, you know, they see it as an uphill battle, but they're not alone, and the music helps reinforce that idea.
And Daryl, going back to you, there's the web, you know, you can download. I mean, there's so many multiple ways to connect with people.
Correct. And one of the things I would have to stress, however, Professor Simi has said something to the effect that these concerts that they have are relatively small. They have to go through the web and things like that to get their music distributed, because it is really hard for a white power band, or a WP band, as I will call them, to have an event because of the opposition. You have groups, and
protesters,
we call them Antifa, that would actually stop these events from happening. I come from the punk rock scene here in, I actually come from the New Jersey punk rock scene. And 20 years ago, there was a concentrated effort to keep these bands from propagating. Whenever they have a concert, it has to be a covert operation with them. They announce the concert. They don't say exactly where it is. They just give you the general area. You buy your ticket. Mm-hmm. You go to a meeting place where they tell you where the concert is. And that keeps protests down. And the only way they have been able to move forward is via the web, and where people do not have to, where they don't have to hide what it is they're selling, and people who want to buy the product can do it anonymously.
Indeed. Pete, would you say, and it sounds like this is some of your findings, is that these groups have gone, if not underground, a bit under the radar?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. You know, a lot of what sustains the movement that people don't realize are these kind of more hidden, less visible spaces. The fact that the music shows are relatively covert. Things that happen in people's homes, the private parties, the backyard barbecues, for the ones that are the neo-Nazi groups that are more religiously inclined, the Bible studies that they have, you know, small get-togethers at restaurants that they favor. Those kinds of occasions that bring them together are really important to keep the larger movement going.
So we have neo-Nazis at Bible study classes?
Yeah, for those that are what's called Christian identity, they use the King James version of the Bible, but they radically reinterpret it. They believe that Jewish people are literally the children of Satan, that when Eve copulated with the serpent, the lineage of that is modern-day Jewish people, and so they literally descend from Satan. What they call non-whites are also what they also call mud people, were God's creation, and that they were a subspecies, they came from below, and that, of course, Aryans or whites are God's true, chosen children. So that's one branch of the larger white supremacy movement, the so-called Christian identity.
And that's, hold on to that thought only because we have to take a very short break, and that's Pete Simi, and he's a criminology professor at the University of Nebraska, co-author of a book called American Swastika, Inside the White Power Movement's Hidden Spaces of Hate. And about 10 years ago, he actually spent some time and had interviewed Wade Michael Page, accused of the rampage killing at Oak Creek, Wisconsin, at a Sikh temple there. Also with us is Daryl Lamont Jenkins. He's been tracking racist hate groups in the Delaware Valley. He's the founder of the One People's Project. Any questions or comments, 1-888-477-9499. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Abington Health supports WHYY. Their Orthopedic and Spine Institute is performing a procedure called anterior hip replacement. Using a mini incision and specifically designed surgical table, surgeons at Abington and Lansdale Hospitals are able to replace the hip joint through the front rather than the side, sparing muscles. The hospital stay and the recovery time are shorter, enabling patients to return more quickly to regular activities, like driving. More at abingtonhealth.org/bone.
It's almost time to get your garlic in the ground. I'm Mike McGrath, and on the next You Bet Your Garden, we'll reveal how to grow great garlic and how to best use this year's heavenly harvest, plus answers to all your growing questions. That's You Bet Your Garden, Saturday morning at 11, right here on WHYY-FM.
The documentary The Barber of Birmingham looks at the role James Armstrong played in the civil rights movement and why he put his life and business on the line.
I always thought when I was growing up, the worst thing a man can do is nothing. I got a lot of pictures of everybody in here that was doing something.
We find out more about The Barber of Birmingham next time on Tell Me More.
This afternoon at 1 on WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. We're learning more about Wade Michael Page, the alleged shooter who killed six people, wounded three at a Sikh mosque near Milwaukee, Wisconsin. He apparently shot himself in the head after being shot by the police. We're learning that he had associations with neo-Nazi groups and also had played in a number of white power rock bands. Our guest Pete Simi interviewed Page about a decade ago, spent a couple of years talking with him about his life and his associations with these groups, and he had been doing some research on white supremacist groups, co-author of this book called American Swastika. Also with us, Daryl Lamont Jenkins, founder of the One People's Project, and he tracks hate groups here in the Delaware Valley. Any questions or comments, give us a call at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Daryl, let me go back to you, since you track these groups here in the Delaware Valley. How active is the Delaware Valley, and are there a lot of these bands that we've been talking about that have concerts here or private parties here?
Well, a lot of the bands that we see today are coming from the East Coast in particular, but we have a number of bands here in Pennsylvania, and especially in Atlantic City. There's a band called Chaos 88. They just wrote a song about me.
About you?
Yes. It's called Dirty Daryl, and I've been getting a kick out of taking the video down from YouTube over the past couple of weeks. There's other bands that have tried to play mainstream venues. They pretty much try to fly under the radar. But when they get there, but when people realize what they're dealing with, they more or less shut them down if the club is receptive. One of the things that's really disturbing now is that a lot of these clubs that allow these bands to play are basically making the argument that they're only trying to make money or what have you, and that's a problem.
So they don't endorse or not endorse their...
Right. They try to play... they try to just do the plausible deniability thing, and that's an issue. Now, there is a white power concert that's being promoted in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, in Harrisburg, on September 8th. That's going to have a number of the bands from the local area and from down south. They've been promoting, a group called Keystone State Skinheads have been promoting this for the better part of the year now.
Pete, let me go back to you, and you wrote a book called American Swastika, obviously looking to understand what attracts people to these organizations. Do you find some themes or certain characteristics? I mean, we look at Wade Michael Page. There's much we don't know about him. We know he had problems with the military. We know he had problems holding on to a job. Apparently, had some problems with alcohol as well. Seemed to be attracted to these bands with these very violent lyrics. Does that tell us something about who gets attracted to these groups?
Well, I think one of the most important things to realize when it comes to, what type of person is most likely to get involved in these groups is that it's really a pretty wide cross-section of folks that get involved. And in my own research, but other researches as well, have found that, as far as like educational background, socioeconomic status, it's really a wide range of folks. And so there doesn't seem to be any one, set profile in terms of, demographics that, kind of predispose a person to get involved in these types of groups. I think, one of the things is there's, certain stereotypes about what type of person gets involved in these types of groups. I think we want to be cautious and careful about that. Some of the people that get involved in these groups are, as far as they've achieved high levels of education, they have professional occupational jobs, they can be quite intelligent. You just have a wide range of different types of folks that are involved in these types of groups, and I think that's important to know because it suggests that the recruitment potential of these groups is maybe much wider than we might recognize.
Daryl, you want to add to that?
Yeah, over the past couple of years, I noticed that we have been dealing more and more with what we call the suit and tie Nazis. They're called suit and tie Nazis. Yeah, they're called paleo conservatives, and they work out of the Washington. There's a cluster of them that work out of Washington D.C. We're all familiar with how bad Pat Buchanan is. These are literally his friends. And
well, I would be careful about.
All right.
Naming names.
Okay, I apologize for that.
Yeah, I can't verify that.
I will not mention any names in particular, but there is a group of individuals that have been working in the political scene and in the academic scene as well. We do have individuals here in the general area that have been involved in some of the more political activities, such as the Tea Party and the Minutemen from 4 or 5 years ago. So, yeah, we're not just dealing with folks who have who basically have bad lives or criminals or what have you. We are dealing with people who are pretty solid.
And going back to you, Pete Simi, you had described some of these concerts as turning violent sometimes, or certainly aggressive dancing, I think you described it as. Are these groups naturally violent, or is it more people saying racist, defamatory, derogatory things about other groups of people?
Well, it's both. I mean, there's definitely violence is a part of it. I mean, if you look at just in terms of scale, is it all talk, or is it, you know, and how much, you know, actual action occurs? Yeah, certainly there's more talk than there is action, but that's true of all extremist movements. There's always going to be more talk than action. But a certain segment of these groups do act on the violent rhetoric, and I think one of the things to keep in mind with Page's involvement in particular, but just the wider issue of the white power neo-Nazi music, is that do most people who are involved in that scene go out and do something like the tragic incident that occurred in Wisconsin? You know, fortunately, no, they don't. And I don't think anybody's suggesting that the music, you know, is a direct cause of the type of violence that we saw in Wisconsin. But it does set, a stage, so to speak, and it certainly reinforces a person's commitment and involvement in these types of groups where violent rhetoric is pretty front and center.
And that's, Pete Simi, our guest today. Our guest, one of two guests today in Radio Times, had been doing some research on white supremacist groups for a book that he co-authored called American Swastika. And one of the people that he interviewed was Wade Michael Page. And I should correct myself. He's the alleged shooter who killed 6 people and wounded 3 at a Sikh temple near Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Also with us, Daryl Lamont Jenkins, founder of the One People's Project. He's been tracking hate groups here in the Delaware Valley. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Let me get Ramin from Pennsylvania to join us. Ramin, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
So I have a two-part question, one related to the musical aspect of these groups, and the other one related to the political sort of aspirations that they might have. So there's a theory in religious, at least in religious terrorist groups, related to schisms between groups and sort of process of radicalization, which is called the narcissism of small differences, I believe, that these groups, oftentimes one part of the group will want to split off, and then there will be some sort of conflict, internal conflict between them. And so I wonder, do these conflicts occur between, is there within and between hate groups, or are they also like in solidarity in their beliefs that they don't fight amongst themselves? And the second part,
let me take the first question only because, if I can put that to you, Pete, and I think I understand what he's saying, is are there conflicts within these various hate groups?
Yeah, there's actually quite a bit of internal conflict within the white supremacist movement, and there are definitely splinters that end up fighting with each other, essentially. And in particular, over the last decade, some of the key leaders, largely through natural causes, have died, and there's been, I think, probably more fragmentation today than there was, say, 20 years ago. But infighting has definitely been characteristic of the white supremacist movement for quite some time, and sometimes that also results in a group will splinter off from a larger group because they feel like the larger group maybe isn't walking the walk, they're just talking the talk, and then that smaller splinter group will actually begin to walk the walk and engage in violent acts of terrorism.
Ramin, let me give you a chance to ask your second question. I'll put that to Daryl. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was pretty much going to say the same thing the professor was saying. I mean, over the past decade, you had two of the largest and more powerful groups out there where the founders had passed on, and infighting just destroyed them. There's one of those groups that now has four different versions going under the group's name right now. And it used to be a time when this organization was huge, solid, and now
it's kind of fractured.
And now it's not even worth paying attention to in many respects.
Ramin, you had a second question about music. Go ahead.
Yes, Sam. I wondered if these schisms also occur and can be traced back through the musical aspect of these groups, and if there's fighting between fans of different bands. Thank you so much for taking my call again.
You're welcome. And I guess same kind of question, whether you see, and I'll put this to you, Daryl, whether you see people affiliated with some of these hate groups also going from one band to another. The bit that we know about Wade Michael Page was that he had played in a number of bands. Is that unusual?
Well, in his case, no, only because, as I alluded to earlier, a lot of the bands within the Hammerskin Nation stable, it was basically one guy that everyone knew, and the rest were more or less hired guns. But they all interchanged with each other. So that's, I would say, only what I was told basically from one person, that it was just to make them look larger.
Oh, interesting.
And that's the only way I see it. That's the only thing I've seen.
Pete, let me go back to you. Are we seeing an increase in these white supremacist groups?
Well, if you look at the Southern Poverty Law Center's figures, nationwide in terms of the numbers of hate groups, that their figures suggest pretty substantial increases over the last 5 or 7 years. Sometimes it's hard to know exactly what to make out of numbers of groups, though, because that can mean anything from essentially one person down in their basement who calls themselves the World of Aryan Warriors, that's got a website, to an actual more substantial group. So that it's hard to know exactly what that means in terms of numbers of people when we're talking about numbers of groups. But there's one thing that's very clear is that these groups have been able to persist over time, and there's a variety of things that help them do that, not the least of which is the music scene.
Is the music to hold them together. I wonder, too, whether we are a more diverse country than we have ever been. We've had some tough economic times in the last couple of years, and we have a black president. Pete Simi, does that also kind of feed some of these groups?
Sure. I mean, all of these become potential fodder. The controversy over so-called illegal immigration is a fairly long-standing hot-button issue that these groups will latch onto and use to try and gain new adherents, but also to mobilize themselves, issues that they can try and kind of organize around and galvanize their members around.
Let me get, looks like Becky from Pennsylvania to join us on Radio Times. And Becky, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. I used to live out in Las Vegas. I'm actually very white, but I look very Mediterranean. Mm-hmm. So I've actually had to deal with these guys back when I was living out west. Like, every so often I'd come across a group of guys, and apparently white supremacists, because they'd start hurling invectives at me. And it's very scary, and I can imagine what it's like for someone of color to go through that. What do you do? I mean, how do you handle these folks? I ended up pretty much just getting the heck out of Dodge.
Well, Daryl has tracked these organizations, individuals in the Delaware Valley. How do you deal with it? And Pete, I'd like to hear from you as well. Go ahead, Daryl.
I recognize that they're more afraid of us than we are of them.
Oh.
That in a nutshell. I have dealt with these individuals when they hold their events, oftentimes by myself. With the exception of one incident a couple of years back, I've never really had too many physical confrontations with them over the past few years. They basically want to talk.
Hmm. Talk to you.
Yeah. I put myself out there, and I think that's one of the reasons why. But I would just tell people, don't get too intimidated by these individuals. A lot of times, as we've been pointing out over and over again, a lot of times these are individuals who are basically trying to figure out what are they going to do with the rest of their lives. At the core of it, unfortunately, the wrong people are giving them the answers, and we just have to recognize it like that.
Well, Pete, let me put the same kind of question to you. We hear from Becky. They can be frightening looking. Let's be honest about that.
Right.
Are these scary people?
They can be. I generally concur. I think that sound advice that Daryl provided. But I there have been tragic incidents where, for instance, I worked as a legal consultant on a case north of Tampa Bay, Florida, where a single mother and her son, who was a homosexual, moved in without knowing next to a neo-Nazi kind of compound, a small compound of about a half a dozen guys that were living there. And they found out about her son. She happened to have an African-American gentleman help her move in, and so right away they targeted her as a race traitor, and then just got worse from there, and they began to slash her tires, break into her home, and then eventually one of them went over in the middle of the night and broke in and tried to kill her. She was able to get away, but her son's friend was there borrowing their computer, and he was stabbed to death.
Oh my gosh.
So, those types of tragic, incidents of violence, do happen, and again, largely a lot of talk, but sometimes people put those words into action, and it results in tragic, violence.
Obviously, a challenge to law enforcement, based on your research, Pete. Does law enforcement, do they understand these groups, and do they have ways of dealing with them? I mean, I ask that because we have free speech rights in this country. We can say things.
There's some real fine line, some real fine lines here, and it's very complicated. I was asked yesterday, should Page have been picked up by law enforcement once they knew, that he was on the radar screen and he was, in these bands and, had these beliefs. And my response is, what have you been picked up for?
Right.
Had he committed a crime? Had he done something that would warrant, law enforcement picking him up and taking him in for questioning? And so I think, we have a lot of, we have to be cautious and careful about, how we respond to tragedies like this. I mean, obviously our first priority needs to be to do everything we can to help in the healing process for the victims of this violence. But when we start asking questions about how we can potentially prevent or intervene in incidents like this, I think we do need to pause and consider, questions about, the fact that we live in a free and open society.
Yeah.
And, these kinds of ideas are going to be part of living in a free and open society as much as we may, detest them.
Daryl, you wanted to add something?
Basically, yeah, very quickly. I wanted to just point out that he is correct. I didn't want to give anyone the impression that these people aren't dangerous. There is a time when you are dealing with people who will lash out, and unfortunately, that's what we saw on Sunday. We do have to be mindful of that, but by the same token, I also say that we have to recognize that there is something going on in the mind that we may need to take a look at as well.
Well, Pete Simi, I know you've been busy the last couple of days. Thank you so much for joining us today on Radio Times.
Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. He's a criminology professor at the University of Nebraska, co-author of a book called American Swastika, Inside the White Power Movement's Hidden Spaces of Hate. And he had interviewed Wade Michael Page a couple of years ago. Daryl Lamont Jenkins staying with us for the rest of the hour. He tracks racist hate groups here in the Delaware Valley, founder of the One People's Project, 1-888-477-9499. We'll be right back.
Announcing the 2012 WHYY Connections Festival, September 6th through 9th. 4 days of free arts and culture events, including an outdoor concert featuring Yola Tango, Frank Turner, Maps and Atlases, and more, Saturday, September 8th. And on September 9th, performances by Fred Paris and the Five Satins, Charlie Gracie, and more at the Philadelphia Doo-Wop Festival. More artists and events to come. Visit whyy.org/connectionsfestival.
On the next Fresh Air, we talk with Chris Rock. He stars opposite Julie Delpy in the new film comedy, 2 Days in New York. He's also producing a new comedy show on the FX network called Totally Biased. Chris Rock on the next Fresh Air. Join us.
This afternoon at 3 and again tonight at 7 on WHYY.
I'm Robin Young. Join us next time for the news and these stories here and now. The woman who was once called the Jackie Kennedy of China faces murder charges there. We'll speak with an Alabama lawyer who worked with her here on a case in this country. Also, a Nobel Prize-winning physicist explains how exploding stars can help us understand the universe. That's Public Radio's Daily Digest of News and Culture, here and now.
Today at noon on WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen, and we are talking about and trying to understand the allure of hate groups. And again, Daryl Lamont Jenkins with us here in our Philadelphia studios, founder of the One People's Project. Joining us now is Frank Meek. He's a former racist skinhead, a leader from South Philadelphia, author of Autobiography of a Recovering Skinhead, also wrote a book called From Hatred to Harmony. And Frank, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Hi, thanks for having me.
You're welcome. And to our listeners, lines open at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Going back to you, Frank, and frankly, I've interviewed you several times before, so I know a bit about your life, your attraction to these groups when you were a kid growing up in South Philadelphia. We're trying to understand Wade Michael Page, someone we don't know a lot about, but we are learning that he was attracted to some of these neo-Nazi groups and also to these white power rock bands. Help us understand from your perspective what these bands are about.
Well, you know, first, the music is the key, especially now as a lot of the bigger groups are collapsing. The National Alliance has kind of really lost its pull due to legal problems and a lot of infighting. But the music, you know, it really keeps this movement young. It keeps the kids, you know, it stops this movement from just being the old Klansman sitting on the front porch with a shotgun. So the more the music comes out, the more kids get involved. So he was one of the people that was starting to become an up-and-comer in that music scene, too.
Played in a number of groups. Daryl, you want to add to that?
Well, I would say he was actually a vet considering the bands that he was playing in. I mean, Max Resist, Youngman, Aggressive Force, Intimidation One, those are the biggest bands in the scene.
You're right.
You're absolutely right.
He's absolutely right, yeah. I mean, he was more than an up-and-comer. He's absolutely right.
I will say, however, when it comes to the band Endapathy, that was a new band. He started that in 2005, but he started that with the folks from Definite Hate. And by that time, they was in the VH1 special from 2002. So, yeah, I mean, he was a player for a very long time.
And Frank, going back to you, and we were talking actually with Pete Simi about some of these groups before you joined us, and he was saying, yes, some of them do spew hate through their lyrics, and others are more about pride and power. Is that how you see it?
You know, they try to say that. You listen long enough, every band that's on them labels, all their messages goes back to the same. You can't just have songs when you're listening to hate rock that's just like, oh, let's have pride in the Irish-American culture. No, it all goes back to kicking, punching, fighting, destroying of another race. It's you know, that's what sells in that music world. So there are some people that try to claim this is just about pride, and I think can answer this too. You know, you listen to them long enough, in 10 minutes that pride turns to, you know, well, that's because the blacks aren't as good as us, or the Jews do this. Like, it's always about somebody else, every time. So it's kind of a bait and switch to get you into the movement for some people. Hey, we're just proud of the white race, and it normally within
a pretty short time, you'll figure out it's just about eight.
Well, let me quote something from Label 56 describing itself as an independent music for independent minds. I was listening to some of their music yesterday afternoon. It says here, Label 56 is very sorry to hear about the tragedy in Wisconsin. Our thoughts are with the families and friends of those who are affected. We have worked hard over the years to promote a positive image and have posted many articles encouraging people to take a positive path in life, to abstain from drugs, alcohol, and just general behavior that can affect one's life negatively. Daryl, does that hold water with you?
No, it doesn't, because I know the members of the people who put together Label 56, and they work closely with the neo-Nazis here in Philadelphia. Matter of fact, they had participated in a number of different number of rallies here in the area, particularly the Leif Erickson celebration that's held every October. In fact, it was advertising one upstate Pennsylvania that just got canceled by the city up there in Moosic. I know some of the individuals, and they have been particularly violent. They have participated in neo-Nazi rallies. There's pictures of them with swastika flags behind them. I think basically it sounds like it sounds like the statement came out of the national like one of the hate groups helped them along with this kind of statement, because it's so generic, so to speak. And
Frank, do you buy it?
I don't buy it at all. And you know, one of the things that I was able to stand on when I was a skinhead was, hey, I don't do drugs. Oh, I might be going out and causing harm to other people, but hey, I'm anti-drugs. And that's that. You just said that one of the things we try to make people take a different path. Is it a nonviolent path? Probably not, because again, that's not going to sell records in that record world. So I don't buy that at all. They're hurry up and trying to cover their rear ends in this, because I think they're afraid people might sue, or they're just trying to cover themselves right now. It's all about hate. They can try and mask it any other way. There's enough good people out here now that call it like it really is, and hopefully the record label is coming to an end. Sad thing is they might get more popular in that world.
Mm. Well, there's always a danger, and we actually talked about this when you talk about hate groups, whether a show like this becomes a recruitment tool. Not that we're telling people to do it, but they are listening to it, and there's something that they find attractive. Daryl, let me turn to you. How important is it to understand tattoos? Can you read
the
someone?
Tattoos? The tattoos basically identify where you're at in many respects, or where you were. And the reason why I say where you were is because there was a documentary that I participated in called Erasing Hate that showed every now and again on MSNBC, in which somebody who was a member of one of these hate groups had tattoos all over his body, all over his hands and face. And when it was time for him to come out, he knew that he had to get rid of those tattoos. So that's what the documentary was about. It defines who you are. So yes.
So what you have written on your body.
What you have written on your body tells everybody what you're about.
Let me get Christine to join our conversation. And Christine, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
Well, speaking of tattoos, besides the frequent tattoo of the swastika, and maybe skulls are related to it, though that might not be a hate group, the skull tattoos. But are there other sort of secret tattoos, or tattoos that are only known to the members, that, you know, those of us who like to observe tattoos might be informed about the person's, identity?
Sure, Christine. Let me see what Frank Mink has to say. Frank?
You know, there's a lot of the Viking runes have been hijacked. A lot of the Celtic symbols have been hijacked by the movement. And so there's things like that where I look at somebody, I can tell why they have it there, why they are getting Viking runes. If they are more or less racist, and you have to go buy off the other tattoos. So there's not much secretive about it, because one of the things I always wanted everyone to know was why I had these tattoos and why I believe what I believe. And they're kind of a roadmap to my past. Now, most of mine are covered up or been lasered off now, but they were in the movement. It showed that I had been around a long time. It's kind of like a battle scars. Is the more tattoos I can get, the more people knew I was serious about these beliefs. So, you know, there's not too many secret hidden ones. There's a couple codes like 14 and 88, numbers like that when you see. But those numbers have now become so prevalent that everyone knows that normally if someone just has the number 14 on them or number 88, that usually that means
they are part of the movement.
And what are those numbers? I mean, why 14?
14 is for the 14-word oath, which is about the defending this world for the next upcoming white children. Mm-hmm. It's an oath. And then there's the 88 is for HH, for the eighth letter of the alphabet, for Heil Hitler. So.
Wow. Wow. You want to add to that, Daryl?
Yeah, and then there's also 311, which is not the band, but they got it, but they got in a little bit of trouble because of the code. It's K's the 11th letter of the alphabet. Mm-hmm. There's 28, which is Blood and Honor, which is a neo-Nazi international neo-Nazi network. I mean, it goes on and on and on and on. I mean, the symbols and the tattoos, yeah, it does take some knowing to know what you're looking at.
Christine, thanks for the call. Let's see what Greg from South Jersey has to say. Greg, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much. Big fan of the show.
Thanks.
And also a big fan of Frank Nieck. I have his book. Awesome story. I saw you on Hardball this week. I have one question. Are these Nazi and neo-Nazi and Aryan Nation groups, are these groups affiliated and or connected to any of our major political parties on the Republican, conservative, or two-party sides? Are they affiliated and connected with these groups? And thank you so much. Keep up the good work, Frank. Take care.
Thanks, Greg, for calling. Can you answer that, Frank?
Yeah, no, yes, I can answer that.
Okay.
You know, a lot of what is happening when it comes to connecting the dots between the two groups, you know, it's become pretty evident in some races right now that there are some people that are under the Tea Party flag that have neo-Nazi past. One of the big thing that I've seen with the guys, because, again, I got out of this in 1994, 95, there was a lot of skinheads back then. It was one of the biggest times that this country had. In that movement, well, a lot of those guys that had gotten older but still wanted to keep their beliefs but didn't want to be so radical have, yeah, I mean, it's sad to say, and people will fight with me about it all day, but I can see them joining the Tea Party. I see posts that they put on Facebook. I see rallies, and I see them there. So I think, and also the Minutemen, a lot of the militia groups, which all tie back to that the Tea Party. So I do see some tie-ins. Again, it's milder than the racism, because I don't want to say all the Tea Party is racist. I'm not making that statement, but there definitely is a thing that attracts the older racists to that movement. And I think Daryl might be able to answer that, too.
Well, and just to make sure, Frank, that our listeners understand, so these are people that you knew when you were part of these skinhead groups, and now you see them as older people affiliated with these more political organizations?
Yeah, because they can't do the street fighting anymore. You know, it's not going out to street clubs and fighting the left wing groups and, you know, fighting the anti-racist action groups, and, you know, it's not there anymore. You're getting older, you got kids, but they still wanted to stay politically active, but they kind of want to be legitimized now. So they kind of had made the turnover. I mean, there's a case in Pennsylvania right now where a guy ran for something, and he was a neo-Nazi. He still kind of claims that he is, and he ran with some Tea Party support. You can Google it and find the story. I mean, there's about 15 other stories just like it.
Go ahead, Dale.
One People's Project broke that story. The gentleman's name is Steve Smith, and he was a member. He is an associate of the Keystone State Skinheads. He used to be in Aryan Nations. He used to be in the Klan. He was associated with David Duke's organization. He was just elected a Republican committeeman in the town of Pittston. Just a couple of minutes ago, I referred to a European-American Heritage Celebration that was supposed to be held in Moosic, Pennsylvania, that got canceled. He organized that. Mm. It was only after Label 56 had advertised it that the city of Moosic, Pennsylvania, realized that he was putting that together, and he's held it two years prior. But he's a perfect example of what I'm talking about. Of the neo-Nazis in the area, he is in the state of Pennsylvania, for that matter. He is the most active politically. And he's been around for about 20 years.
And we should just say, based on some of the reading that I did, is the Republican Party is trying to figure out what to do with this person. It's not like they have embraced him.
Right. I've been trying to contact the new head of the Luzerne County Republican Party to find out where he's at on this, because Mr. Smith has been saying that, trying to allude that he is, that the chairman is supportive of him, but I want to hear that from that person first.
Now, let me get Eric. Go ahead, Frank.
No, I just wanted to add real quick that actually, and there are some people in the Tea Party up in that area who asked him to tone it down, but they still knew, they still had the knowledge of what he believed. They were just like, hey, kind of tone it down. Like, that's what scares me. That's truly what scares me, is that they were just like, hey, just tone down your rhetoric, but we're still going to kind of be with you, but, you know, if you can, tone it down. And that's scary.
And I'm quoting from NBC News here, Stephen Smith, co-founder of a racist group called the Keystone State Skinheads. Let me get to Eric from Newark to join us. And Eric, go ahead, you're on Radio Times.
Hello. I just wanted to comment on the man's previous comment about the tattoos and symbols behind them. My family came here from Norway, and we've always embraced that. And I personally have tattoos of Viking ships on my chest and some Viking things on my arms. I just wanted to remind people that are listening today that, you know, please don't view me as a racist individual, because we were taught love, and that's not anything to do with us. I think a select few people who are skinheads or neo-Nazis, white power symbols and maybe swastikas, but, you know, anything. My name is Eric. I was named after Leif Erikson, so I just want to keep the viewers, listeners' minds open to that.
No, I appreciate
that. I don't want to be labeled.
No, indeed.
That's why I said that this is, they had hijacked some of those symbols. So he's absolutely right, and that's why my first statement was they hijacked the Viking runes and some of the Celtic symbols.
Frank, we're almost out of time here, but I know that you left the movement in part because you played basketball with some black prisoners when you were in prison. There was a Jewish store owner who hired you and cared about you, and that seemed to be what, and perhaps you just kind of aged out of your life. Is that what got you out?
It is, but to bring this really, what happened is human beings showed me compassion. And I didn't have much of that. And for whatever reason, I still had some humanity and compassion in my life that when people started showing it to me, I started recognizing it. And I think that's what this world needs in general, is more compassion towards one another. I think it's a horrible event, but the Sikh community is one of those people that's what they care about, is compassion and love. And I think we're going to learn from them now that this tragic event has happened to them. And much love and respect to them.
Well, Frank, I appreciate you joining us once again on Radio Times. Thanks so much.
Yeah, see you, Daryl.
Thank you.
That's Frank Meek. And Daryl, thank you very much as well.
Thank you for having me.
And our other guest, Daryl Lamont Jenkins. And we began our conversation talking with Peter Simi. Go to whyy.org/radiotimes to find out more about this program. Kevin Griffin, the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times, the show produced by Susan Greenbaum, Patty McMahon, Dennis Devine, and Debbie Builder. I'm Marty Moskowain. Thank you so much for joining us.